with everyone later and that Ryan said he would pick me up.
Yeah.
Ryan chuckled.
He didn't tell you.
I shook my head.
He babysits for a family in his neighborhood. He has since we were 13.
Huh, I said. I didn't even know he had a job.
Well, it's barely a job. I swear he'd probably do it for free. They're good kids, and he just goes over and goofs around with them for a few hours.
You go over with him sometimes?
Once in a while.
I smiled back at him, knowing my next comment would teeter between complimentary and flirty. I bet they love getting to hang out with a track star.
Ha,
Ryan said.
They prefer Max. He reads them stories, and he knows a lot about airplanes.
Yeah, what is the deal with the airplanes? I'd been wondering since his first paper airplane note in class. Is it just paper airplanes, or like, all airplanes?
All airplanes. It's always been a thing with him. You should have seen his bedroom when we were kids. Airplane wallpaper, airplane comforter, craziness.
I kept it to myself that I had seen Max's bedroom once, with the airplanes soaring over his bed.
He never grew out of that phase. He says that even though airplanes are now a commonplace form of transportation, they're still a baffling feat of science and human will.
I laughed. It sounded like he was quoting Max exactly. You've heard that speech more than once, I take it?
More than twice. Ryan grinned. One time when we were little, he ate birdseed because he thought it would make him fly like a plane.
No way, I said, giggling. No way. He looked over at me, his expression fading to a small smile.
It's nice to hear you laugh.
I felt hot all over. What did my laugh even sound like? Was it dorky?
You seem like you're doing good,
Ryan continued. Doing well, I corrected in my mind. I feel better than I have in a while, I admitted, which makes me feel guilty sometimes, but I'm working on it. We were in Alcott's parking lot by then, and Ryan pulled into a parking spot.
You know, Aaron and I had Spanish together freshman year.
He looked over at me, hesitating.
I didn't know him that well, but I really liked him. And I'm sure he'd want you to be happy again.
This wasn't pity, and furthermore, it was true. Aaron's mom even told me this before they moved to Georgia. She hugged me goodbye and said, "He'd want you to be happy again, sweetie. I hope you will be." "I'm sure to," I told Ryan. Aaron could make anything fun, so I try to remind myself that having fun again is
a good way to honor his memory.
Ryan finished. Exactly. It can be hard, though.
Yeah.
He frowned, looking down at the steering wheel.
I remember, after my grandpa died, one of the hardest parts was all the firsts without him. The first ski trip, trying to remember that he wasn't back at the lodge, complaining about the weak coffee. The first family wedding without him. I kept looking around for him. Kept forgetting.
I didn't know Aaron well enough to have mile markers like that. We'd never celebrated a holiday together. But I still knew exactly what Ryan meant. The first time I went to Snyder's Diner, where Aaron and I had our first real date, I had to get up and wipe my eyes in the bathroom twice. Yeah, I said. I'm still working on that.
What firsts do you have left?
He asked.
If you don't mind my asking.
My heart had its very own panic attack. I couldn't think of a single lie. Well, I haven't gone out with anyone since Aaron, so that's probably the biggest one. Yep, my brain said. You just said that to Ryan Chase, out loud.
You're out with me, Ryan said.
Mortified, I tried to make my laugh sound natural and relaxed.
I probably sounded like a mental patient cackling over a joke that a bird told her. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do,
he said, smiling. And I get it. You have to promise not to tell anyone this, but I still haven't kissed anyone since Leanne.
Really?
Really. I went out with a few girls over the summer, mostly to spite Leanne. Terrible, I know. But when it came down to it, I couldn't kiss any of them because it just wasn't for the right reason. I hoped that God, or Cupid, took notice that Ryan Chase and I were finishing each other's sentences. I understand. I think I've accidentally built everything up too much after Aaron. I wish I would have gotten it over with. Just kissed someone early on and freed myself from the who and when.
Me too, Ryan said. You know what?
What? I asked, looking over at him. Before I could even register what was happening, he leaned across the car and pressed his lips against my cheek. I almost jerked back in surprise.
All right, he said, pointing at his cheek. Lay one on me.
Before I could think twice, I planted a kiss right on his cheek. He smelled like pine trees.
There.
He grinned, sitting back just as fast as he'd leaned over.
That fixes it for both of us, which seems like exactly the right reason.
And that's when I fainted. Okay, I didn't really faint, but something inside me snapped like an elevator cable, my heart plummeting to my feet. I felt lightheaded and combustible, my neck hot beneath my collar. Thanks, I said, laughing a little. Thanks? Someone kisses you and you say thanks? Did you learn nothing from Rory Gilmore? That takes the pressure off. No, it doesn't. Now I have no idea what's going on. Do you like me, or are you just being a good friend in the most confusing, lip-touching possible way?
Hey, he said. What are friends for, right?
Not this. I climbed out of the car onto shaky legs. Ryan Chase kissed me. Ryan Chase kissed me. An hour later, I found myself searching through the fiction aisles in Alcott's while everyone else sat in the coffee shop part of the store. Max had arrived a few minutes before, but he immediately excused himself to pick out a novel before the book counter closed. In my seat at the corner booth, I couldn't hear myself think. Ryan was making Tessa laugh despite herself. Morgan was batting her eyelashes at Tyler, and I was in a confused near panic. Ryan Chase had kissed me. What did that even mean? I needed what Kaylee called my introvert timeout, a few minutes to re-energize and collect my thoughts. I passed most of the alphabetical by author shelves before I found Max sitting on the floor. He was leaning against the shelf, long legs crossed in front of him. There was a small pile of books at his side, presumably those that were under consideration for purchase. Hey, I said, turning into the aisle. He looked up from the book he was holding.
Hey, girl.
The first time he said this to me, in his simple, cheerful way, the phrase struck me. It was something I expected to hear from Morgan or Kaylee, not from a cerebral teenage guy. Can I sit?
Of course, he said.
He slid the pile of books to his other side, making room for me.
Is Ryan boring you with sports talk?
My face flushed at the mention of his name. I sat down, wondering if Ryan would tell Max about kissing me. He seemed so casual about it, he probably wouldn't even think about it again. Nope, I just need a little quiet for a minute. My eyes followed the spines of the books across from us. I had always found comfort between rows and rows of books, some familiar, some foreign, stacks of old friends and piles of new friends to be found. I looked at the book in Max's lap. The Amateur Marriage, I read out loud.
I didn't know Ann Tyler wrote a book about my parents. Max laughed, that delighted laugh of his. I felt that rush of pride like a tiny shock to my system, a flashbulb going off.
How's that going? He asked.
His voice went quiet, and even though I was still glancing down at the books, I could feel his eyes on me.
Your parents, I mean.
I shrugged, glancing up at him. Still weird? I can't think about it too hard, or the entire universe shifts a degree like everything's a smidge off. He nodded.
Makes sense. It's disorienting.
Yeah, a divorce is supposed to be final. Period.
No semicolons.
Precisely, I said, unsurprised that he'd get it. No ellipses either. I pulled my knees up against my chest, content to sit still. Max continued flipping through his stack of books, occasionally pausing to put one back. After a while, Max scooped up The Accidental Tourist.
Ready?
He asked. But I wasn't, not quite. In a minute, I said. And so, we stayed. Ryan went home early to rest up for a morning workout, and I left with Max, feeling dejected. I was banking on Ryan driving me home so I could figure out where the hell that kiss had come from. Now Max and I were in my driveway, engine running. We'd spent most of our conversation talking about his airplane obsession. Newton's third law of motion, Bernoulli's equation, the Wright brothers. But we'd moved on to discussing my other Max revelation of the night. I can't believe you kept babysitting a secret from me, I told him, leaning back against the headrest. He made a face at me.
I wasn't keeping a secret, I was just not mentioning.
Same thing.
Not the same thing at all.
I rested my legs against the dashboard, relaxing against the seat. Not telling is a secret, period. He arched one eyebrow.
Stated like someone who keeps some good secrets.
I smiled and shrugged my shoulders.
So you admit it?
I thought about this for a moment. Of course I kept secrets, but I wasn't sure if I was willing to own up to it. There was something about Max's expression that made me talk, though. Like he already knew, anyway. Yes.
You have secrets you don't even tell Tessa? Like, no one knows?
I tell my grandmother everything, I said, tilting the vent until the heat blasted against my face. But she has Alzheimer's, so she doesn't remember half the time. This seemed to catch Max off guard. The look on his face was one I'd seen 100 times from Tessa. A focused gaze, gauging whether she should change the subject to keep me from getting upset. In an attempt to lighten the mood, I said, You tell me a secret.
You already got one, Max Watson, babysitter.
Oh yeah, I smiled over at him, still completely tickled by this new information. He turned his face to me.
You tell me a secret.
I searched my mind for a good one. Okay, I did not like Indiana Jones.
What? Which one?
There's more than one. Max pressed his face into his hands and groaned. It starts in a temple or something. I don't know. I watched it with my dad when I was little and I fell asleep. He swiped his hands through the air, making a pronouncement.
All right, it's settled. I own all of them and you at least have to give Raiders of the Lost Ark a chance.
No way, I said, laughing. This is why it's a secret, so no one tries to make me watch it. He gave me a challenging look.
But maybe you'll love it. What happened to beginner's mind?
I wished I hadn't told him about that. Your turn, secret, go.
He said. Okay, I hate all hot tea. I think it tastes like bathwater.
Interesting. I saw my window of opportunity. Okay. Take it or leave it. I watch your movie if you try at least 2 teas of my choosing. He groaned again, tipping his head back.
Deal. Your turn.
I hesitated, already feeling a burst of embarrassment. I'm applying to a summer program in New York to study screenwriting for TV, which I think I might want to study in college, but I don't know.
Whoa, Max said. That is awesome.
I smiled a little. Not that awesome. I haven't even told my mom, and there's no way she'd let me go even if I did get in.
Why not?
It's expensive, for starters, and she's really overprotective.
Well, he said, maybe you should write yourself a script of what you plan to say to her. Work on that rhetoric.
I wasn't sure if he meant it as a joke, but I seriously considered it. That's actually a really good idea. Okay, your turn.
I also applied to a summer program in Italy to study Latin and history and pasta.
I laughed. So do you want to study history in college or like Italian or something? He leaned his head against the steering wheel.
God, I don't know.
You don't have to answer. Sorry, I didn't realize it was
an endless source of angst for me.
His laugh sounded self-deprecating and even a little bitter.
Nah, it's okay. I have the grades and I have the test scores, but I have no idea what I want to do, which means I have no idea what schools I'm interested in. I thought if I got some distance with this study abroad trip, maybe I'd have a better idea.
And Italy's a secret? Does your mom know?
She's the only one who does. And now you. I'm pretty sure I'll get in, but I'm waiting to hear before I tell Ryan. I sort of feel like I'm bailing on him.
He sighed.
Okay, enough cousin guilt. Your turn.
I don't know what compelled me to say what I said next. Maybe I was thinking of him and Ryan, of me and Tessa. Sometimes it sucks to be Tessa's best friend.
Why?
Max asked. I thought he would look surprised at such a radical statement about one of our mutual friends, but he didn't. I brushed my bangs to the side. Because that's my identity to people. Tessa's best friend. And like every guy is in love with her, she's beautiful and interesting and, you know.
I'm not in love with her,
Max volunteered. Oh no? I asked. Max and Tessa seemed to enjoy each other's company so much that I couldn't help but wonder if there was more to it for him.
I mean, I do think she's beautiful and interesting, he said.
My stomach seared with that old, familiar jealousy.
But that's just, you know, pulchritude in conversation.
Pulchritude, I repeated.
Yeah, it means...
I know what it means. I stared at him for a moment. And those two things seem like plenty.
For some people, maybe. I don't know, I just don't think of her like that.
Then you're the only one who doesn't. I shouldn't have expected him to get it anyway. Never mind, it's not something a guy would understand.
Really?
Really? He turned to me, his eyes steady on my face.
I don't understand what it's like to feel eclipsed by a charismatic best friend even though she or he doesn't mean to.
My mouth fell open a little and I snapped it shut. I'd never thought of his relationship with Ryan that way. After a moment, I said, maybe you do. He smiled, smoothing his hands against the steering wheel.
Maybe.
As we sat there for a moment, I wondered what had compelled me to tell Max such a private, embarrassing thing. I almost wished I could snatch the words back from the air. Or that I could wiggle my nose like Samantha in Bewitched and turn time back a few minutes.
Have you ever noticed, he asked, that you sing the backup parts in songs?
I jerked my head over to him. I do not.
Yeah, you do. Last week when we were driving to the away match at Beech Grove, there was an Aretha Franklin song on the radio, You hummed along with the backup singers.
First of all, I said, I deny this accusation. Secondly, what does that have to do with anything?
He shrugged. You're not Tess's backup singer, and I'm not Ryan's sidekick either. So I don't think either of us should act like it.
We'd only really met a few months ago, but Max knew more about my life than almost anyone. It was easy for me to be honest with him because there was nothing to lose. With Ryan, I was always afraid of embarrassing myself, wary to state any opinion or try to be funny. Max was just Max. And he was a solid friend to have in my corner. Here's a secret. I turned my head toward him. You don't completely suck at giving advice.
That, he said, is not a secret.
Max Watson had a few secrets of his own. Most of them were silly, admitted through laughter. He cried more than once reading The Hunger Games. He dressed up as Harry Potter for every single elementary school Halloween, and even the smallest amount of coconut would make him break out in hives. I told him about my irrational fear of bees. I'd never been stung, so I had no idea if I was as allergic as Tessa. That I thought the phrase was a blessing in the skies until I was 13, and that I insisted on being called Jessie in kindergarten, because I was so obsessed with Toy Story 2. But I couldn't quite bring myself to tell him about Aaron. And I couldn't tell him about my drowning nightmare either. Maybe those secrets would tumble out eventually. But for now, like any good secret, I was safe with Max. Chapter 14. By Christmas time, my parents were all but fused at the hip. Defined boundaries and my comfort level fell by the wayside in favor of perpetual togetherness. I was forced to spend the holidays doing every cliched family-oriented event that the season had to offer. We picked out a tree, decorated it, made cookies, decorated them, and watched what felt like 100 Christmas movies, all while enduring my parents' shameless flirtation. I visited my grandmother 3 times in 4 days just to get a break from them. She was doing well, if a little confused and very tired, and her recovery was better than all of my Christmas presents combined. By the day after Christmas, I'd already been coerced into 1 game night. Which was ameliorated only by Tessa's presence. But since Tessa was in Santorini with her parents until the new year, I was not about to agree to a reprise of game night. I needed an excuse or at least an ally for the evening. Morgan, I knew, was at church choir practice, so I only had 1 shot left. I'm going to a party with Eric, Kaylee said through the phone line. Sorry. My desperation won out and I was reduced to begging. Can't you cancel? He'll understand, right?
I would, but things have been a little rocky between us. I really need to spend some time with him.
Fine, I grumbled. It wasn't an exaggeration on her part. Tension between her and Eric seemed to flare up and settle in a less than 24-hour cycle. Normal, fun-loving Kaylee was gone, and she'd been replaced by girlfriend Kaylee, whom I didn't like nearly as much. Even when she was with us, she had 1 eye on her phone and 1 foot out the door. When the doorbell rang less than an hour later, I hoped she'd changed her mind. My parents were setting up the fact-o-mazing board, prepping for a night of family trivia. I was calculating how many of my possessions I would have to sell in order to buy a ticket to Santorini. I'll get it, my mother called. Please be Kaylee, I pleaded with the universe. A few moments passed before I heard the sound of Deck the Halls echoing through the house. It wasn't a choir. It sounded like only a couple of voices, all male. We exchanged confused glances, and my dad stood up to see what was going on. But the singing cut off abruptly to the sound of laughter. Another moment passed, and my mother came back into view, ushering in two guys, Max and Ryan, decked out in holiday sweaters.
"You know these people?" my dad asked.
Yeah, I stammered. "I do."
"My mom channels her holiday stress into cookie baking," Ryan said, holding up the tin in his hands. "She sent us out to spread the Christmas cheer." "She's like a very bossy Keebler elf," Max added. "Well," my dad said, brows furrowed, "that's nice." "Oh my goodness," Ryan said, surveying the room. "Oh my goodness." He was clearly putting on a nicey nice boy next door routine for my parents. "Are we barging in on family time? I do apologize."
"No trouble. You should stay a while. We're having a game night," my mom said, beaming at them. She was always complaining that I spent all my time at friends' houses, never bringing them over to our house anymore. My philosophy was, if you want your daughter to have guests over, don't divorce her dad and then flirt with him in your home.
"Oh, we wouldn't want to intrude," Max said.
"No," my mom said. "It would be perfect. We were about to play a trivia game to prep Paige for quiz bowl matches." Max cocked an eyebrow at me. My Christmas wish became this: let me disappear from this place.
"Oh, really?"
I wasn't sure if I wanted them to stay. On the one hand, I was actually friendly enough with Ryan Chase that he would drop cookies off at my house and stay for family game night. But he'd be there for a family game night with my drama queen sister and divorced but dating parents. It could turn out to be mortifying, a total step back in seeming dateable.
"Well," Ryan said, clasping his hands together, "that would be lovely."
I shook my head but grinned anyway. My dad stood up taller, a fatherly instinct meant to intimidate. He eyed each of them.
"Ryan Chase," Ryan said, sticking out his hand.
My dad shook it. "Honey," my mom said, addressing my dad, "you probably recognize Ryan from the newspaper. There's always a picture of him in the spring for track, and this is Max, Julie Watson's son."
"Big fan of your column," Max said, shaking my dad's hand. He turned to my sister, who was looking particularly sulky. "Cameron, right?"
A look of surprise registered on Cameron's face, and she glanced at me like she couldn't believe I would tell my friends about her.
"Right?"
she said, narrowing her eyes, probably suspicious that I complained about her to Max. "Hey."
"All right."
Ryan stretched his arms as if preparing for a race.
"What are we playing?"
It took an hour and four cookies apiece for our game of fact-o-mazing to really hit full stride. I took a deep breath in and closed my eyes. It was little better than a guess, and it was very possible that I was about to be dead wrong about who was arrested for voting in the 1872 election. "Susan B. Anthony," I said in one quick breath before I could change my mind. My dad hung his head and muttered,
"Crap, yes." "Boom," Ryan said from beside me.
He sat up in his chair and pointed at Max.
"What now?"
It had been an even game so far, a competition between evenly matched teams. We'd pulled partners from a hat at my mom's suggestion. I wound up with Ryan as my teammate, while Max and Cameron paired up. That left my parents as a duo, solidifying their campaign to become the world's only divorced Siamese twins. My parents, beyond being generally academic, had the advantage by years. They were old enough to remember events that were taught as history to the rest of us, but young enough to answer many of the pop culture questions with ease. Many, but not all. They missed a question about a sitcom that I, of course, stole, bumping them out of the game. My mom patted my dad's leg, smiling. My gag reflex trilled in my throat. Four questions went back and forth between our remaining two teams, and we answered all of them correctly. It was an impasse, which, by the game's rules, called for a lightning round. My mom fished out a bright yellow card for the sudden death face-off. "It's all yours," Cameron told Max. I glanced at Ryan. He nodded confidently at me.
"You can do it."
"You'll go back and forth listing answers," my mom explained. "The first to repeat an answer or not come up with one is the losing team. Roll for who answers first, highest number." Max and I both nodded solemnly, facing each other across the table. He smiled at me, but I kept my competitive face on, lips pressed into a flat line. I rolled a 5. He rolled a 2.
"For the win," my dad said, reading over my mom's shoulder. "Name the novels of Charles Dickens." "Oh, it is on," Ryan said, pumping his arm in a whooping motion like he was in the bleachers of a football game. "Clash of the Titans."
"Great Expectations," I said.
"A Tale of Two Cities."
"A Christmas Carol."
"Nicholas Nickleby."
No one spoke as I inhaled and exhaled audibly, searching the outer reaches of my brain. I could see the intense look on my face reflected back at me in Max's glasses. He arched an eyebrow at me, daring me to be wrong. "Hard Times."
"Oliver Twist," Max replied easily.
How had I forgotten that one? "Little," I began. Oh, what was it? I closed my eyes, looking for a mental image of D section of Alcott's fiction shelves. "Little Dora." My mom winced. "It's Dorrit, actually. Max?"
"David Copperfield," he said,
no trace of gloating in his voice.
"That means Max and Cameron are our champions." "Boo, bad call, ref,"
Ryan joked, while Max and Cameron performed the team handshake they had come up with at the beginning of the game. My dad patted me on the shoulder.
"Wow, pager. Guess you met your match."
I shook my head, which felt clearer now that I wasn't under pressure. "Bleak House," I muttered. I forgot Bleak House. That was on my flashcards, too.
"I know," Max told me. "You had me quiz you with them."
I stuck out my tongue at him, but I wasn't really mad. In fact, I was grateful that they happened to stop by on the night when I could most use the company. They had turned what could have been an awful game night into a fun Friday. We played another round, and my parents emerged victorious. "This was so fun," my mom said. "When are you going to let us come to one of your quiz bowl matches, Paige? Max, she keeps telling us that parents don't go." "Mom," I said.
"That's true, actually," Max said. "Because it's right after school and just in a random classroom. But parents are allowed to come to regional semifinals if we make it." "Well, if you do," my dad said, "we'll definitely be there front row."
"Great." I shoved another one of Mrs. Chase's sugar cookies into my mouth. "I'm really glad you came," I told the guys when I walked them to the door. "I was in need of the company."
"Yeah, Kaylee told us," Ryan said.
I cocked my head, confused. Max laughed.
"She texted me to say we should crash your family's party."
This situation sort of made me sound like a loser, but it was a good night all the same.
"This was fun," Ryan said as he wrapped one arm around me. "We're leaving for our ski trip tomorrow, so Happy New Year, Paige."
He kissed the top of my head before starting down the driveway. "Happy New Year," I repeated, almost dumbfounded. Sure, it was a tiny peck, totally platonic, but it felt like a day after Christmas miracle.
"Happy New Year, Janie,"
Max said, smiling. Soon, I'd put the New Year's refill into my planner. Another fresh start. I held out my arms and hugged him through his coat. Happy New Year. Be safe. They waved as they backed out of the driveway. Max honked twice before driving off, and even amid the falling snowflakes, I had never felt less cold. That night, I startled awake to the sound of my phone vibrating. The screen blared in the darkness, glowing with Kaylee's name. Kaylee? Paige? She sounded tearful or near to it. I sat straight up. What's wrong? I was at a party with Eric and Carmel and the cops broke it up. There was a pause and I could hear her muffled crying. Everyone went running and I think they must have caught Eric because he isn't answering his phone and... Tell me where you are. I spoke as loudly as I dared. If my mom heard, she'd call Kaylee's dad and Kaylee would be in so much trouble. In a neighborhood in Carmel where the party was, I'm like hiding in some random woods. Her voice broke, giving way to a sob. My phone battery is low and I just don't know what to do. Call Tessa. That's what she would have done if Tessa wasn't in Greece. Tessa could have handled this. I considered calling a cab, but I'd never even seen a cab in Oakhurst. Maybe one could drive here from Indianapolis, but that would take too long, and riding with a cabbie at 2 a.m. didn't seem safe. I swore in my mind long strings of the worst words I knew as I paced the carpet and worked up a sweat. Paige? Kaylee's voice was small. Give me a sec, I said. I'm thinking. I knew the McMahon's garage code, and I had Tessa's spare car key. When she gave it to me, she said it was in case I left anything in the car that I needed during the school day. The only time I used it was when she misplaced her own keys in her massive purse. If I can get you home, can you sneak back in without waking your dad up? Yeah, Kaylee said, for sure. My feet hit the floor, even though my plan was basic at best. Sneak out of the house, use Tessa's garage code to get in, and take her car. Drop a pin and send me the closest address to you, then stay there in case your phone dies.
You can't tell your mom, Paige. She'd call my...
I know, I whispered, cutting her off. I'm not telling my mom. Trust me, okay?
Okay. I'm so sorry, Paige. I didn't know what else to do.
Don't be sorry. I'm on my way. After we hung up, I glanced out the window. The snow hadn't stuck to the ground, so I was safe from a footprint trail. I tugged on clothes from the hamper, mind racing. My first instinct was to arrange pillows as my sleeping form, like they always do in the movies. Instead, I left a note on the end of my bed just in case. Mom, had to help a friend out of a bad situation. I promise I'll be back soon. Call me if you read this. I extracted my keyring from my purse as quietly as I could, clamping down so the metal couldn't jingle. I held my breath, turning my doorknob as slowly as possible. I used to sneak downstairs for midnight snacks in the weeks after Aaron died, when I was barely sleeping. My mom never knew. I stepped lightly into the hallway and every rustle of carpet, a sound I'd never even noticed before, made my heart race faster. I didn't exhale until my feet found the foyer's hardwood floors. It was a wonder I didn't pass out. With nerves short-circuiting, I made it out the back door. Only there, in the cold stillness of the night, did it sink in that I was really doing this. I locked the door behind me and took off, running for Tessa's house, through the back of my neighborhood. The stream water was freezing against my shoes, but I kept going up the hill. Nothing moved but me. Breathing hard outside the McMahon's garage, I cringed as I entered the password. The garage door lurched open, far too loud. I stood there at the mouth of the garage and waited for a neighbor to appear, screeching about burglary.
It remained quiet. Even the sound of the car starting made me wince, like my mom could hear it somehow. But I backed out. I closed the garage door behind me. My hands shook on the steering wheel as I made my way out of Tess's neighborhood. One half of my brain took action, doing what needed to be done. The other half was flipping out and screaming, "What the hell are you thinking? You snuck out and stole your best friend's car? You're gonna be in so much trouble." But I pushed my focus to Kaylee, scared and cold and alone. My right leg quivered as I braked at stop signs, following as my phone spoke the directions. I tried to control my breathing, but all I could think was that my mom would call any second, panicked and furious. When my phone announced that I'd arrived at Kaylee's location, it felt like an hour had passed instead of only 12 minutes. Around me was a suburban neighborhood like mine, dark but for the moon and porch lights. I pulled the car over, scanning for any sign of life. My finger touched the brights, nearly flashing them twice in case Kaylee was watching. Before I could, a figure darted out from the trees in a coat I recognized. Kaylee flew into the passenger seat and slammed the door. She threw her arms around me, hugging me across the car's center console. "You came," she cried. "Oh my God, I was so freaked out, Paige. I've never been so relieved in my life." I hugged her back. The familiar scent of her hair product, undercut by beer and the woodsy smell of cold earth. Her presence made me fully believe it. I did the right thing. Even if my mom found out and grounded me, I wouldn't take it back. "Are you okay?" I asked. "Yeah, I guess. I mean, now I am. Eric's okay too. He was just hiding in the basement so he couldn't answer my calls until just a minute ago. And like, it wasn't even that big of a party. The cops are so dramatic." She sat back, taking in the space between us. Her brows furrowed. "You took Tess's car." "Yeah," I said. She gawked at me as I directed us out of the neighborhood. I didn't ask any more about the party. Kaylee didn't need me to tell her that this whole night was probably a series of unsafe choices. She couldn't have known that going in. She just wanted to spend time with her boyfriend and his friends. And running from the cops and hiding in the cold woods was a more lasting educational experience than anything I could say. Besides, sneaking out with a senior boyfriend to a party seemed so foreign to me, especially a party with drinking and cops. It wasn't that I wanted to be invited exactly, I just didn't want to feel like such an outsider to Kaylee's new life. Morgan's recent mood made a lot more sense to me in that moment. "It's different from what I thought it would be," Kaylee said quietly. "What is?" I asked. "Being in love." When I glanced over, she was looking out the passenger's side window. "The highs are so high, but the lows are even lower. It's like he can make or break my entire day." I frowned. That didn't quite sound right. Handing someone else the only set of keys to your happiness, it seemed like too much to part with, even for love. A little voice in my head whispered, "That's not how it should be." Maybe it was my intuition talking, but the voice sounded an awful lot like Morgan's. A part of me resented Eric, that he would put Kaylee in a position to run from the cops. I'd only met him once, and he was subdued. Not like I thought he'd be. Kaylee chattered extra, prodding him with questions like, "Tell them about that night," and he'd give us a half-hearted explanation. I didn't say anything, though, because what did I know? My expertise on romance included grieving your first real boyfriend and desperately crushing on someone from afar. And I wasn't even doing either of those things very well. When I pulled onto Kaylee's street, every nerve in my body coiled up all over again. I had to return Tessa's car and sneak back into my house. She reached over, clutching my arm.
You're the best, you know that.
I just did what Morgan or Tessa would have done.
No.
She smiled in an almost sad way.
I mean, they might have picked me up. But Morgan would have lectured me about making safer choices, and Tessa would have judged me in silence for being, like, immature or something.
That was probably true.
Anyway, she said, I owe you one.
No, you don't, I said, and she blew me a kiss as she went around the back of her house. I thought about that on my hurried walk home, after I'd put the car back in its place and shut the garage. In friendship, we are all debtors. We all owe each other for 1,000 small kindnesses, for little moments of grace in the chaos. How many times had Kaylee laced her fingers through mine when people were pity-gawking at me?
They're only staring because they're jealous of our love, she'd say, and I couldn't help but smile.
I slipped back into my quiet house and crumpled the note I'd left on my bed. Huddling under my covers, I felt a little bit proud. Because with true friends, no one is keeping score. But it still feels good to repay them, even in the tiniest increments.
Chapter 15. As winter forged on, the doldrums found me. School was back in full force after break, and it seemed like I was the only one who wasn't busy. Kaylee was with Eric. Tessa was racking up yoga hours for her certification. And Morgan was in overdrive with her many school activities. A few weeks after break ended, I decided to venture out in the snow on a Friday night so I could spend a gift card I'd been hoarding since Christmas. My parents were cuddling on the couch when I asked my mom if I could take the car. To where? She hit pause on the romantic comedy they were watching. Just Alcott's.
With whom?
No one, I said. I want to pick something out with the gift card you guys got me. She frowned, glancing over at my dad. I don't know. Is it still snowing?
Nope.
Well, there could be black ice, she said. We can just take you. I hung my head, as I often did when my mom imposed psychotic restrictions. I tried to remember her expression at Aaron's funeral. She looked physically ill watching the Rosenthals' pale faces after losing their son. It was an image that wouldn't leave me, and I knew it wouldn't leave her either.
Your car has all-wheel drive, my dad said. It's only a few miles.
I suppose that's true. My mom looked at me intently. Drive slowly and text us when you get there and when you're leaving, understood?
Sure, I said, trying to sound nonchalant. The more excited I got about something, the more skeptical my mom became about allowing me to do it. She reached for the remote, and I mouthed thank you to my dad as she hit play. He nodded, giving me a wink. I drove as carefully as I'd promised, staying a bit under the speed limit and braking evenly. But I did blast the radio. Singing along with whatever light rock radio station my mom had set as the default. The parking lot was more crowded than I'd expected, other people with cabin fever finally braving the weather. Alcott's looked warm, the front window glowing with soft light. Inside there was a line at the coffee counter curling around the pastry display case. I hurried in, the cold nipping at my face. When I pulled the door open, the smell of fresh coffee and cured paper hit me. As it often did, Alcott's Books and Beans felt like coming home. I sent the obligatory text to my parents, then started scouring the fiction shelves.
Using book lover's math, I quickly calculated that the gift card could get me 5 paperbacks, 3 hardcovers, or 1 hardcover and 3 paperbacks. In half an hour, I selected 8 contenders. I stacked them in my arms, balancing the unwieldy pile as I made my way to the seats in the coffee shop. There, I could take my time reviewing them, maybe reading first chapters to see which most compelled me. People were packed into every table, couples leaning over their hot chocolates to talk in quiet tones, older folks with their noses buried in autobiographies. I stood in the center of the seating area, pressing my chin into the top book to keep the stack upright. Then, in a near booth, I saw a familiar face half buried in a book. "Max," I said, gripping my books as I made my way toward him. He looked up, a smile springing to his face. "Hey."
"Hey, girl," he said, standing up from the booth.
He relieved me of a few books in my pile and set them on the table.
"Sit."
Max wore a green knit sweater over a white collared shirt, and I smiled at the idea that he got kind of dressed up for a date with a pile of books. "Thanks." I slid into the seat. I guess a lot of people had the same idea. I thought I'd be the only loser here on a Friday night.
"I'm often a loser here on a Friday night."
"Yeah, me too," I said, unraveling the scarf from my neck.
"I know. I've actually seen you here once or twice before."
I frowned. "Why didn't you say hi?"
"Oh, it was when I was at Coventry. Last year I was here hanging out with a friend. I just remember because a nearby couple was having the nastiest, loudest breakup right over there."
He gestured toward the table a few over from ours.
"Everyone in the store was gaping at them, including me. But then I saw you sitting in the corner booth."
"I was here?"
"Yeah," he said with a laugh. "I remember because you were reading a book with Lucille Ball on the cover, and you didn't even notice them."
"Really?" I laughed too. "I don't remember that." He shook his head.
"Of course you don't. You were in another world, completely occupied with whatever you were reading. And you just had this look."
"I had a look?"
"Yeah, totally."
"What look?" Max thought hard, his eyes moving away from me. He blinked and then returned his gaze to mine.
"Like you had been drowning and the book was air."
I was quiet, caught in the surreal moment of having my feelings described so exactly. That was how it felt to me, to live in other worlds, books or TV, like breathing became second nature again within their safety.
"Oh my God," he said, covering his mouth.
His expression warped until he looked as though he was about to get sick.
"Paige, I'm sorry, I didn't even think about what I just said."
"What?" I clearly hadn't thought of it either. The realization hit me like a hardcover book to the chest. "Oh. Drowning." Maybe Ryan told him because it came up at the lunch table. Maybe he overheard at school. Before that moment, I wanted to believe Max didn't know about Aaron. It made things so simple. "I didn't know that you knew."
"I, yeah.
"Oh." I wondered how long he had known, but it didn't matter. I wasn't going to lose my candor with Max just because I felt a little vulnerable. Clearing my throat, I pushed my bangs out of my face. "You don't have to apologize or tiptoe around me. I never even notice until people stop themselves. They'll start to say something like, 'I'd rather die than,' and then look at me like I'm gonna cry. They're almost too considerate out of pity."
"I don't pity."
"I know you don't," I said, cutting him off. "Really, it's okay."
"Okay."
He looked down at his hands. Glancing up at me, he added,
"But you can talk to me about it, you know, if you ever want to."
"Thanks, but I've talked about it a lot. To my friends, my grandma, to a therapist," I said, smiling. Then I pulled the top book from my pile and set it in front of me, ready for review. Okay, I'm going up for coffee. By the time I returned with my latte, Ryan Chase was sitting in our booth, red-faced in his Oakhurst track sweatshirt. I commanded myself to play it cool, even though my mouth wanted to form a slap-happy grin. Hey, Ryan, I said, settling into my side of the booth. Ryan looked between me and Max.
Seriously? You're both just sitting here reading? I thought you were joking when I texted you.
He glanced at Max, who just shrugged.
Ah, Ryan said. Maybe I'll just go back to the Y and work out more. Sounds more fun than whatever it is you're doing here.
This time it was me who shrugged. I mean, it wasn't my coolest moment, but there was no hiding it. Max and I were sitting at a table with no less than a dozen books.
Hey, Ryan said suddenly, looking at me. You want to hang out 2 weekends from now?
Sure, I said, and I swallowed back the urge to say, if by hang out you mean make out. I tried not to stare at his lips.
Sweet, he said. Since this loser and Tessa will be off seeing the whatever brothers.
The Baxter brothers, Max corrected. I barely heard him as I realized that Ryan meant it would only be the two of us hanging out.
Whatever,
Ryan replied. Are they a band? I asked. Max nodded.
Tessa got me tickets.
Oh yeah, she told me that. I'd been surprised when Tessa told me she was taking Max to the Carmichael, her spot. When I pointed out to her that he'd need a fake ID, she rolled her eyes and told me not to worry about it. Her life was, in some ways, a mystery to me. For your birthday, right?
Yeah, it's not till early March, but the concert is before then, and we're both dying to see them live.
Cool, I said.
We'll do something cooler,
Ryan said, nodding assuredly at me. I grinned like a deranged idiot, fluttering my eyelashes so fast that they could have taken flight off my face. Max rolled his eyes.
You're just jealous because Tessa thought of an awesome gift and you don't know if you can compete with it.
Am not, Ryan said, indignant. Max looked at me, ignoring Ryan.
He takes serious pride in his gift-giving abilities. Hey.
Ryan held up his hands in mock arrogance.
When you got it, you got it. I've got it,
Ryan announced nearly 2 weeks later. It was February 14th, which is why my heart completely stopped. I stood frozen at my locker, staring into those baby blues. Got what? I said, when I finally found words. I didn't actually believe that he had come over to confess his love. But on Valentine's Day, it's easy to give in to the stupid hope that life will become a romantic comedy.
Okay, he said, leaning closer to me. I have a proposition for you.
Dear God, let it be marriage, I thought. My heart sputtered along, waiting for his next words.
A surprise party.
He glanced around to make sure no one was listening.
For Max.
I should have known this would be about Max, the one thing that Ryan Chase and I had in common. I nodded. If my life had TV sound effects, a sad trombone would have womp-womped overhead. Oh, okay, yeah.
My parents are going to visit my sister at college 2 weekends from now, he continued. But they said I could have people over as long as it's just our friends.
Our friends. I smiled at the idea that I belonged to a group of friends that included Ryan Chase. Even though we'd been hanging out for a few months, I was still getting used to it.
So you'll help me plan it?
Of course.
Sweet, he said. Okay. We can plan everything while Max and Tess are at the concert on Friday. He already knows we're hanging out then, so he'll never suspect anything.
Great. It's a plan. And so, I thought, are you? The next weekend, I attached my sample script and clicked submit on my summer program application. Ms. Pepper had mailed her recommendation. I'd asked the school to send a transcript, and I'd winced as I typed in my account number, thereby parting with the $100.